This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
WFAN-FM, WFAN-FM HD1, New York, and Odyssey Sports Station. He put to bed my Pete Alonso batting second idea.
Yeah, he did.
And I did that most Met fans hated,
quick,
by
it was
way.
Quick, too. No.
I haven't even considered that idea, by the way.
But I think, it'll happen one day.
You think so?
It will happen it'll be game 112. I don't know, whatever.
It doesn't count, though, if there's a lot of injuries. Like, it has to be a full lineup.
That's what I was going
to
say. It's going to be just kind of by necessity.
Yes.
Pete Alonso's going to hit second.
I do want to get something off my chest. I did say to the manager, and you know this, that I score Met games. I score baseball games. I like to score baseball games. All right, something I enjoy. In fact, I wrote a book about it called
Nerd Alert!
My Mets Bible. I was listening to today's Yankees game, as was Big Mac Chris McMonagle, and I was deeply offended by something that was said on the television broadcast. And so this is a message to you, Michael K. Okay? I don't need your snooty attitude while watching you broadcast the game. I happen to think you're very good at it. You're a wonderful broadcaster. But you look down on people like me. You look down on people like Chris Big Mac McMonagle.
I like Joe Beningo.
Let me tell you something, Michael K., about Chris Big Mac McMonagle. He watches every damn Yankee game. It doesn't matter if there was a five-hour rain delay and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know what Big Mac, Big Chris McMonagle does while he watches your broadcast? He scores the game.
Suck it!
Scores the game. That's what he does. It's what I do. But this is really more about him than me, because I wasn't scoring today's Yankee game. I have a radio show to do. We have responsibilities. I wasn't going to take the game off to score a Yankee game. I couldn't do that. I'd get in trouble. I heard your broadcast today, Michael K., and I heard something you said when Paul Goldschmidt, guy I personally really like, hit that two-run double. Do you know what Michael K. said?
I do know what he said.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the voice of the New York Yankees basically spitting on someone like Chris Big Mac McMonagle.
Now, if you're keeping score at home, please stop. It's the first spring training game, but that is a double, an RBI, and the E4 allows Bellinger to score.
Thank you. Why? Why?
I don't think he was telling you.
Who the hell are you to tell Big Mac or me to not score our first spring training game? Why? We're excited. We're watching you on TV. You should be happy we're doing this.
What he was saying was this was a complicated scoring.
That's not what he was saying.
It was. Don't copy this because, look, this is what happened. It's a double with an RBI, the E4, blah, blah, blah.
That happens in the regular season. He's saying, here's what Michael K. said to Chris Big Mac McMonagle. And subsequently said it to me. I wasn't scoring this game, so I take it personal, but less personal. But you called Big Mac, who is one of the most loyal Yankee fans. Again, K, he watches you all the time at 2 a.m. if there's a rain delay and you're on the West Coast. Well, that's if you made the West Coast trip and you just hand the game to Ryan Rucco. I'm sorry, you're making it personal now. You started. You told him he's a big fat loser for scoring the game. That's what you said.
Suck it!
You called my friend, my dear friend, Chris McMonagle, a loyal Yankee fan, a loser.
Is that he really didn't call upset him, you? He didn't call him big fat. By the way, you added that, so that's you calling him
big. I think you need, not to me, because you know what? This isn't about me. I know I'm channeling anger, but I'm channeling the anger because I'm like Chris, and I would do this for tomorrow's Met game. If Gary Cohen comes on the broadcast and says, don't score this game, you loser, I'll be mad at Gary.
He didn't say you loser.
Listen to it again. Tell me if you think he said loser. Go ahead.
Now, if you're keeping score at home, please stop. It's the first spring training game, but that is a double.
Okay. The tone of his voice is, you're a loser. That's what he said to my friend, Chris Big Mac McMonagle. He called him a loser.
Sticks and stones, I mean, pick your bones, but words will never hurt you.
I demand on your next Yankee broadcast, not to me, I'm irrelevant, you apologize to WFAN overnight host Chris Big Mac McMonagle, who was scoring the game.
Or anybody else that was scoring a game as well.
He's the only one I know for sure.
I'm sure there were others.
Apologize.
Hey, you need practice as well.
You're damn right.
You need practice at home, so you might as well. Because that would sound like it was a complicated play that he was going
to. I know it was complicated, but trust me, Chris knows how to score a double and an error, dude. Mm. It ain't that complicated for someone like Mac or me.
What if you're just starting?
Well, then say it in a more respect. Hey, if you're scoring at home, let me help you out with
right,
this.
Instead, so what he should have said is that.
Yeah, well, he didn't. It had nothing to do with the play, Teague. Mm. It had to do with the fact that Michael Kay looks down and spits on someone like McMonagle who's scoring the Yankee game.
I don't think he looks down.
He looks on him. He spit on him right in his face.
No, he didn't. He did. It's too early in the season to have to worry about scoring.
What the hell is this guy's the arbiter of when it's too early?
No, this is a Yankee policy now, Evan. Yesterday, barbecues, ice cream trucks. Today, we wake up, no beard policy. What have I been saying the whole show? They are trying to make the Yankees more loose and fun. Mm. There is nothing fun about scoring a spring training
game. That's not true.
And Michael Kay's is marching orders. I think good ones. We accept no losers in our fan base now. Everything's loose and let's have fun here. Baseball's right. Fun.
I defend Chris, Big Mac McMonagle. I think that it is fun. And yes, tomorrow I plan on scoring the Met game, as does my 8-year-old son. So let this be a warning to Gary Cohen or Steve Gelbs or Gary Apple or whoever they decide to call a meaningless spring training game. Don't lecture us, because we're one of the people that are watching you. So show us respect. Oh, we're on SNY.
Yes, we are.
SNY, can you let them know? And they didn't do anything wrong. This is a K issue. This is Michael K spitting all over Chris McMonagle's face.
Fuck to it.
God, that was not necessary.
She wasn't talking about a face.
That wasn't necessary.
Let's go to Steve in New Jersey. How are you, Steve? Hello, Steve.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the managerial rankings, particularly Boone from yesterday. But first on the facial hair policy. I'm glad I got to say that they kept it to neatly groomed beards. And no doubt, Tiki, Devin Williams would be the first. I think he had his hair grown back 3 days worth already since his first shave.
Now you're probably right, because we haven't seen him yet.
So on the Boone front. So I actually agree with Tommy on this. I've watched every Yankee game, diehard Yankee fan, and forget about the fact that for a moment that he doesn't necessarily make good pitching decisions and doesn't move runners when he should and things like that. Here's why Boone is not a good manager.
Go ahead.
Every time a guy named Gleyber Torres goes back toward right field to catch a pop-up, and he puts one hand up there, every month or so, he'll drop the pop-up because he refuses to use two hands. Mm-hmm. That's on Boone. And every time he hits a home run or he hits a shot that he thinks is gone and he's trying to first base, that's on Boone. All you want is for guys to play hard, right? The reason why Yankee fans don't like some of the comments that the Dodgers made is because there's a lot of truth to it, okay? So they said, you know what? If we run hard out of the box, we may get to second base because the outfielder's not going to be charging the ball hard. Right. And if we charge the ball hard in the outfield, we might get the guy out of second base because if Yankee hit the ball out of the box, he's not running hard out of the box. Mm. And Tiki, you say that Boone protects his players all the time,
but
to a fault because he doesn't get on him when he should.
No doubt. He just thinks they can turn.
Well,
he thinks he can
sack Labor that one game, but
right.
that he sacked Labor once and he should have done it a month and a half before that.
Right, and he should have done it multiple times. Right, like my issue, and I said this last season for the Yankees, is that Aaron Boone makes it seem as if when games get really important, a la the postseason, that they're just going to flip the switch and all of these lackadaisical moments, these errors, these brain farts, for lack of a better word, they're just going to go away. But sports doesn't work there. Life doesn't work that way.
Right.
You don't just flip a switch because you want to be more intense. This is like people always ask me, because I ran track when I was in high school and I was fast as a kid. They'd be like, well, how do you get fast? You practice running fast.
Yeah.
Right? How do you get elite at
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Being a fielder or a hitter, you practice being elite. It doesn't just happen because you want it to happen. And I think that was my biggest issue, is that it was always okay when it shouldn't be.
I think that is a very fair point. It's an excellent point. When I'm looking at how a manager is done over a larger sample mm-hmm. size, like seven seasons.
Right. But this is minutia we're talking about.
I agree.
We're not talking about the macro picture, because the macro picture, Steve's wrong. Aaron Boone's a good manager.
That's my overall point. Like, right. You can find those things. I think that's a great point about how he holds players accountable and saying you should be tougher on your players mm-hmm. or Glaber should have been benched or individual in-game decisions around the bullpen or moving runners. It's all fair game. No one's perfect. Mendy, who did a great job last year, was not perfect.
Right.
There were plenty of times in which I criticized his
moves.
It was
also Mendy's first year.
It was. No, and that's why judging Mendy is very difficult. He's only mm-hmm. been here for 1 year. Aaron Boone's been here for 7 years. And, you know, I bring up Chris McMonagle before. We also share a brain sometimes, even though he's a diehard Yankee fan and I'm a Met fan. But I try to be an IBO. And one thing we've talked about in the past, and I've talked about here with you, and he's talked about on his overnight show, is this simple point that a lot of Yankee fans don't wrap their head around. Aaron Boone has never underachieved with the talent he's had as manager of the Yankees.
Yeah, but has he had,
not once.
Has he hit his full, has his team hit its full potential?
Yes. I would say that last year it did. It got to the World Series and lost to a team that was better than them.
No, last year they should have won the World Series.
Well, they didn't play well in the World Series, but I think we all agreed that the Dodgers were a better team.
Not a chance.
You don't think the Dodgers are a better team?
No chance.
I disagree.
They were using openers to start games in the playoffs.
They had two bullpen games.
Look at their lineup, though. Look at their bullpen. Right. Like, there's other things besides that.
The Yankees still could have won all of those games.
They could have won all those games, but the Dodgers could have won all those games. You could play the same game.
Evan, the reason they lost wasn't because of talent. It was because of fundamentals.
It was execution.
Yeah.
Hold on. That's how they lost game five. Did they lose game one necessarily because of fundamentals, or was it because Freddie Freeman
did one?
That's one play. The Dodgers also executed.
And then they gave up a grand slam because of a bad managerial decision. Right. So
you defended that managerial decision. It's subjective, isn't it?
No. I hated that managerial
decision.
I thought
you said it was...
No, he said, don't blame Nestor.
Oh, that's true.
I said, don't blame Nestor. If you are saying... Because Tim Hill was up too.
Right.
Why are two guys up in your bullpen?
I would have gone to Tim Hill.
What did he say? He said, well, you know, I wanted to see how Nestor, to make sure he's okay. If you have a question, he's not okay, then he's not okay.
So that series to you is an underachieving moment.
100%. I think the Yankees were a better team than the Dodgers in that moment. In that series,
I don't know.
They had a full complement of their team.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Aaron Judge underperformed. Why? Who knows? But whatever, it is what it is. They faced a Dodgers team that had three big bats who came through in a clutch every single time. But despite that, the Yankees still could have won all of those games.
They could have won the series, but I don't ultimately think the Yankees were the clear better team. I think the Dodgers were. And I think in 2019 was the same thing, where they ran into a team in the Houston Astros that I think were better. Same with 2022. So I don't know if they've had a lot of paper, better, yes. Yes. Well, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. I don't think they've ever lost in the postseason to a team that they were clearly better than. They didn't lose to Kansas City. They didn't lose to Cleveland multiple times. They always beat those teams. Now, that doesn't make you the best manager in baseball. I'm certainly not arguing that. But what, to me, it does is prove the point that I don't think he's ever underachieved. We'll get back to your calls at 888-808-1019. Plus, they did it. I'm very excited. Coming up in just a few minutes, a very special show feature announcement that I am so excited about. And I'll drop you this hint. Tiki should be excited about it, too. So, I'm gonna frame it this way. I think this is the most accurate way to frame things. I don't want to oversell. I don't want to undersell. Coming up after Sean Senko at 5 o'clock, we're going to do something that I can see many in the audience loving and being like, that was great and that was fantastic. And I can see many in the audience not being happy about it. So, is that a fair way to frame it, Teague?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a special guest.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a special guest coming up. A little after 5 o'clock.
Some will call it an exclusive.
Yeah, very much an exclusive. And it's a great one from a great place.
Okay. So those are all the hints you'll get, but that's coming up at 5 o'clock. And I can see a lot of people really liking it, and I can absolutely see a lot of people saying, you know, we're horrible, horrible people. Let's get to some of your calls, and then I got a very exciting programming announcement that will be debuting real soon here on Evan and Tiki. But right now, let's go Nick in Dobbs Ferry. How are you, Nick?
I'm doing good, gentlemen.
What's up, man?
Great interview with. I mean, the guy. I'm so upset that the Yankees lost him. But what are you going
to
do?
Right. Well, I mean, he had to be a manager, so it's not like he was getting the Yankees job.
No, true. I mean, I don't understand Boone hate, but I do at the same time. I'm torn, so I don't want to talk about that.
I understand. What's up?
My thing is, I'm not a Mets hater by any chance. Okay, I went to the World Series games for the Mets. Mets gave me a lot of great memories. I have a lot of friends that are Mets fans. I'm really not even into baseball that much. But my thing is, how are the Mets ever gonna be the big brother in this town when you have the Mets Messiah? Well, not Loogie, but basically Messiah and a half, Evan Roberts, starting out his first interview with Carlos Mendoza talking about the Yankees for 10 minutes.
I did that because I hate to say this, but sometimes you can't always be a fan. Now, I am a fan. I think during the interview I was a fan. But Carlos Mendoza commenting on the beard policy is probably the newsiest thing. It's a big story today in Yankee land. And Carlos Mendoza is not just some Met manager. He's a guy who worked in the Yankee organization for a long time. So that wasn't little brother syndrome. That was... It would be interesting to hear from a guy who also doesn't work there anymore so he could be more honest about his opinion on a policy like that.
Let's be real. As long as he's opened up the window there, great interview, clearly, with Carlos Mendoza. Evan, a two-time coward in that interview.
How's that?
I know. Why? Where does that come from?
Leads with the question about the beards. At no point did I hear Evan go, Carlos, and let's be real, they're doing this because you guys got Juan Soto, right?
Well, that's not a question for him. That's my opinion. Well, why would I ask Carlos
wouldn't
about
you want
that?
The manager who's been with the Yankees and it's now not, has Juan on. Soto?
That's a waste of airtime. He's not going to say that.
Well, listen, you never know.
What's more compelling is him noping me to my Pete Alonso lineup idea.
And here's the other thing.
Go ahead.
Man, we had a great segment yesterday. You know, you threw in a question about Nick Madrigal at the end. Maybe replace that with, you know, Carlos, I got to tell you, I don't think you're the best coach manager in New York. Where would you put yourself on?
You think, how's he going to rank himself?
I want confidence.
You know what?
He had championship expectations, confidently rank himself.
I think that would be stupid to ask, but for you, I'm going to spring training in 2 weeks. In fact, we have a very special announcement. We're going to be doing a live Rico from a bar in Jupiter, Florida, which I cannot wait for. But I'm going to see Carlos again, and if you want, I will ask him face-to-face, mano-a-mano, as I reveal my coach manager rankings to him that he's third. I'll ask him where he places himself, just so that waste of time can be on a podcast and not here on WFAN.
Perfect. Make sure you tell him I had him at one. Also, could
you did have him at one. You're right.
I did, yeah, because I actually think higher of him than you do. Now, also,
no, I think very high of him. I just can't put someone who's only been here for a year above two guys like Tom Thibodeau and Aaron Boone, who've been here for much longer and have accomplished more.
That
Mendy has a chance to get there, but I can't put him there now. That'd be disingenuous.
That interview should only, by the way, climb him up the list with how honest and open he is, which I think is a big part.
I like Carlos. He's a very honest guy. You're not going up a ranking list because you're a good interview.
All right.
That's ridiculous.
And there's one
Thibodeau doesn't even talk to anybody. I'm not going to put him down on the list. That's true. A self-centered kind of move. I wouldn't do that.
One last thing here on a Friday.
Good, because the more he talks, Tommy, the later we're going to be to that break I promised you that would be soon.
When you get to this bar, Jupiter, Florida, and you do the Rico, can you just come back and give us a total amount of how many females are at this bar watching you do a podcast at spring training and let us know why it's only one hand's worth?
I believe there will be tons of females there. I believe none of them will have come for the Rico Brown.
Okay. You can't count the people that actually work at the bar.
That's what I think. Let's go to John in Matawan. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. I love the show. Really like with some of the things that you're saying. I want to make a point about Kiki's last thing about, you know, the World Series and the way it ended and things like that. And I got to say, you make a very valid point about it going either way, right? But the problem is that, you know, we can go back and forth about roster last year and some of the not-so-good points. I think we can all agree that a lot of the pitching overall wasn't the problem. Now, delivering in the clutch to me is what the Yankees' Achilles heel has been in recent years. And we can talk about Juan Soto. And listen, that guy's an impact bat. In a way, I'm happy for the Mets because of the fact that he is generational talent from a hitting standpoint. That guy delivers in the clutch.
Right.
That's where the differentiating factor is with Judge and Soto. To me, Aaron Judge is a great regular season player.
Right.
He is.
John,
but in October.
But John, this is what I'm getting at with the mindset that Aaron Boone lets persist there, that it's going to be okay. It'll be fine. We'll flip the switch when it matters most. The problem is that you don't flip the switch, right? The Yankees, and this is going back to 17 probably, when it gets into that moment where you have to be great. There's no other option because if you're not, you're failing.
Hmm.
The Yankees haven't come through. Now, Juan Soto did.
Yep.
But, you know, were the Dodgers a great team? Of course they were, right? They managed to win a World Series having two games in the World Series with starters.
Right.
Right? That's hard to do. Now, the Braves did it a few years ago, but it's just really hard to do, especially against a good Yankees team. But Yankees hit more home runs in that game. They scored one less run in total in that series. So it's like, what held the Yankees back that didn't hold the Dodgers back? And it's exactly what John was talking about.
The way they played in that series.
Your best players better be your best players when it matters.
And Freddie Freeman, who wasn't even their best player in the previous rounds, was their best player.
That's right.
Because he was truly incredible.
So how do you get the best out of your best players in those moments? To me, that's managing.
I understand. Well, the New York Yankees, and it's apt that we introduce a brand new feature that I'm very excited about that I have to admit, yes, I personally requested this. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation about teams that almost won championships around here, teams that came oh so close, and how it bothered me how sometimes those teams are disrespected and they're not shown enough love. So there is a committee here at WFA, and we've used this committee a couple of times. They supplied the rankings for 24 in 24. That's where we rank the best moments of the 24 sports season here in New York. Well, I went to that committee. I sent them a letter, and I said, is there any way you can help us honor the almost champions in New York sports? And they have answered the call.
Get ready for a brand new one-week countdown on Evan and Tiki. Almost champions. This special tribute celebrates the underappreciated near misses in New York sports history. While winning a championship is the ultimate goal, we can't forget those teams that made us believe, even if they fell just short. From heart-stopping moments to near victories, we'll relive the magic and the heartbreak. Tune in as we honor the best almost that left us wanting more. Because sometimes it's the journey, not the trophy, that sticks with us the most. Don't miss it.
Wow.
That's pretty beautiful. Sometimes it's the journey, not the trophy, that sticks with us the most. So now, I have been given more details. starting not this upcoming Monday, but a Monday after that. So what's the official date of that? I guess that's March 1st or March 2nd, something of that
March
nature.
March 3rd.
March 3rd. Starting on March 3rd, we, not us, we didn't decide this list. Tiki would be very biased in this. He was on one of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
We will be counting down the 15 most underappreciated, almost champions in New York sports history. Now, I've been told, here are some of the caveats. They are only going back to 1980. Okay, so the 1973 Mets aren't going to be here. The 76 Yankees, the like, it goes from 80 and beyond. So the 81 Yankees will be there, the Islanders, the Rangers. In fact, if you think about the almost champions, every local team would be represented because the qualification is you need to be in the final round. So the Super Bowl, the World Series, right, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, everyone's going to be represented except the Jets. Unfortunately,
you've been to one and only one Super Bowl.
That's right. And they won it, and it was also long before this. So starting on March 3rd, and I know I could see the nervousness in your eyes.
Why?
Because you're in the mix here, bro.
I mean,
I think your team's going to do well.
But I don't think we're underappreciated.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think the 2000 New York Giants are underappreciated. I think it's still talked about.
Interesting. So off the top, you would say you don't think you're going to win?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Off the top, Sean, knowing the almost champions in New York, and that does include the Devils, I want, and the Nets, like New Jersey counts, it's local sports. Is there anything that, because I don't know. Like, we are not handed this list. I do not know the results. It's not like I got it and I'm playing a game. I genuinely have no idea. I'm curious to see how the committee ranks this. Yeah. I don't know. What's your gut right off the top?
Wow. My gut was going to be the 2000 Giants until TV just put it that way.
Wow.
Because you're right. I'm right.
So you are right, and now I'm even more confused by what this list and this committee is.
They're saying the most underappreciated. Right. Now, here's the thing that Tiki's going to have to wrestle with. The committee may not agree with him.
That's right.
The committee may say, no, we're glad you feel appreciated, because I think you are appreciated, but that team to them may not be appreciated.
I hear 41 Donut too many times.
Okay.
Right. It's probably one of the Net teams.
The Net teams.
No, I mean, they are.
Seriously.
But now
I don't even remember who they were playing when I went to one of the damn games.
Lakers versus Spurs the second year. Spurs one's probably more underappreciated.
The Nets still in the league.
I went to.
By the way, I'm reading some more details. I'll tell you why I don't think the Nets are going to win.
Go ahead.
When they say underappreciated, they talk about also how they captured the city and captured the excitement in that moment.
Right.
So not with
Jewel at halftime.
Yeah, I don't think the Nets, as much as I love them and appreciate them, they never captured the city. So my guess is they're not going to do as well as you think.
Also,
you're probably right.
But it
was a good team.
They were great. I love that team.
Right.
I interpret underappreciated as that sucks that they didn't get the championship, but years later, damn, I wish I was watching that team again.
That could be it. I mean, that's the thing. It's a very open-ended belief on what underappreciated actually is.
Boy, another committee list where a lot is left up to interpretation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Are you going to blame me for this list again, like, if the results aren't what you want?
I spoke to many around the building. Nobody wanted to take ownership for the Volpe flop. Many pointed fingers Evan's way, but I'm still told the Volpe different committee.
Yeah, 24 for 24. The last time the committee was involved in our show, they ranked the best sports moments of 2024. They somehow left out Anthony Volpe's grand slam in the World Series.
Mm-hmm. And I had thought that should have been number one or two. I had pounded the table. I couldn't believe what the committee did there.
Yeah.
My hands were clean. That's all.
Listen, I've always tried to figure out who's on the committee. I've received one name that I've heard is on the committee, and I haven't confirmed it.
Boomer?
But I've heard, no, he's nowhere near this committee. I've heard the guy on the committee is Jody McDonald. I've heard that.
Jody Mack.
I've heard he's on the committee. Now, I don't know if he's confirmed that anywhere, but I've heard rumors that he's a part of it. Sports historian.
Wow.
Been at the station for a million years. His dad was a general manager here in New York, as you guys are aware of.
Richard Beer, too?
I don't know about that. That'd be. I can't confirm that. It's possible.
Joe B
would have said something. I don't think Joe B's on the committee. So, yeah, coming up a week from Monday, March 3rd, Almost Champions, a special tribute celebrating the underappreciated near misses in New York sports. Quick break. We'll come back and hit your calls at 888-808-1019. How we doing on this Friday? Evan and Tiki here on The Fan. If you've missed any of the show, nice little feature we have. You could rewind on the Odyssey app. The TV ratings for last night's USA versus Canada. What was it called again? First four from Face-Off?
Four Nations.
Four Nations. I already forgot. Four Nations. The TV ratings are in, and they are massive. Massive. Last Saturday when USA played Canada, they got a great rating. They got like 5 million people watching,
yeah,
which was bigger than, I think, 5 out of the 7 Stanley Cup final games. The number for last night is enormous. What's that number, Tiki Barber?
9.3 million.
Jeez.
Americans.
9.3 million Americans.
And 6 million Canadians.
6 million Canadians?
Which is about 15% of the country.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just a big number, man.
To put in perspective how big it is, I spent the last commercial break looking at the history of NHL TV ratings. That number in America, because quite frankly, I don't mean to be jingoistic. I don't care about the TV rating in Canada. I care about the TV rating here in the great old United States of America. That is a bigger number than Game 7 of the Cup Finals last year, and it's bigger than any game I could find going back to 1973. That is insanity!
Right, you know what it's mostly, like, I think exceptionally bigger than? The All-Star Game.
Oh, well, that's even, I mean...
The NHL All-Star Game gets 1.2 million viewers.
Well, yeah,
1.2. So it's 9 times bigger.
The NHL is in this weird spot because this is all great and positive and it's a huge rating and I watched the game. I do admit, I feel bad admitting this. I fell asleep in the middle of overtime. I'm so sorry. And there's no reason for me to have fallen asleep because it was very exciting. But, you know, I was into the Knick game. Kudos to Mikal Bridges, by the way. That block at the end of the game against Vukovic to get the overtime. Tremendous play by Mikal. One-on-one deep in the paint. Like, great job out of him. No sarcasm. Did outstanding. But I was watching it, maybe not as into it as I thought I would be, and I did fall asleep. But the negative, I think, is that the NHL is the one sport where things that are not the normal sport does better than it. Like, people are more into the Olympics, people are more into this than they are the Rangers playing tomorrow night against Buffalo. Now, the diehard Ranger fan, this is not about you. You're right. Into it. The diehard hockey fan is into it, but clearly the casuals came out to watch last night's game, and the problem is they may not come back because based on past numbers in the postseason, they're not coming back. So it's a good thing the event was a raging success, but it's also a bad thing that the actual normal NHL could never dream of a number like this.
I know, even in their biggest moment, that is the Stanley Cup. That's what makes it challenging, but it's what we talked about yesterday, and it's why... You know what my opinion was, that this was going to be bigger than the Stanley Cup because the non-hockey fan is going to watch. And even if you're a fan of hockey and your team is not even represented in this thing, it's your country.
Right.
So, of course, you're going to pay somewhat of a bit of attention to it. And then when it turns out to be a great contest through the first two periods, you have to stick with it.
Yeah. The negative is, and we saw this in the Olympics back in 2010, where... The Olympic hockey ratings were through the roof, and there was a hope of, oh, this is going to kind of reignite interest in hockey. It doesn't really work that way. No. It's not like the Rangers-Sabre game is going to get a huge number over the weekend. So it's awesome. It's great for the sport, and they've conquered the all-star demons that every other sport has.
That's exactly what I was getting ready to say, because this is the only sport where you can have an all-star game feel this important.
You're right.
You can't do it in basketball because they just don't care, and the format's bad. We were trying to speculate, how does basketball do something like this? Like, could they have a Four Nations basketball tournament? Like, the problem is no. You can't field another country's team. There's not enough players.
You'd almost have an international team, and is there really pride in being Team International versus representing your country?
Probably not as much as it is Team USA versus Team Canada, NHL players, because there's so many of them. Football absolutely can't do this, because it's really just an American sport, even though they're infiltrating from other countries as well. But I feel like hockey's figured this out in a way that no other sport can.
Hockey's definitely figured it out like no other sport can. The problem is these events are more popular than their actual sport
and
product.
Right. What they haven't had before that they're going to have going for them is that we get right into the Olympics next year now. So let me get this straight. So there it is, Four Nations Face-Off.
Right.
Olympics.
Yeah.
And then they go back to an All-Star game?
I got to look at the exact what they're going to do the 2 years, but they're going to start this World Cup of Hockey. So I don't know if that's always going to replace the All-Star game. That I don't know confidently. But what I'm saying is usually when the Olympics, I know you mentioned 2010, if you get casual people in, they may not jump back in for another 4 years, and that's how you don't build on it. So even if they don't come for the back for the playoffs this year, they're aware of who Connor McDavid and Jordan Binnington is. They will be back into the Olympics next year. Now you're talking about a casual audience jumping in back-to-back years. That's important for the sport.
888-808-1019. Let's go to Jamie in East Brunswick. How are you, Jamie?
What's up, Evan? Good afternoon, gentlemen. Doing well professionally and in personal life.
Most certainly. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you, man. What's up?
Evan, once a year I agree with you, and it hurts my soul. It really does. The last time I agreed with you, as a matter of fact, was about we got cut off. And I was talking about how, and agreeing with you, how the Yankees are going to hate losing Juan Soto if they lose Juan Soto. And I don't care if you're a real Yankee fan. You hate it with everything and your passion still. And the fact that you brought that up today about the batting order is brilliant. I was saying it last year. The Yankees should have had Juan Soto batting behind Aaron Judge. If they haven't batting behind Aaron Judge, especially when you get to the playoffs, when you have these greater pitches, they're going to pitch the Judge a lot easier for Judge to hit than what they did to him. Because he's batting behind Soto.
Yeah.
That's just the bottom line. So if you put Alonso in front of Juan Soto, it's a given.
But the problem is, Jamie, and I'm glad you agree with me, the manager not only disagreed with me, he responded with, nope. Like, you talk about a shutdown.
Right. Well, you can do that when you have Juan Soto because he's guaranteed to be the same. He's always consistent. Even regular season, postseason, hell, in spring training, he's probably going to have an OPS of over 1,000. It's just who he is.
I think with Soto last year, and I hate to get back into the last year arguments, but he is a Yankee fan. I respect that. During the regular season, I liked Juan Soto batting ahead of Aaron Judge. The moment it needed to change was the postseason.
Yeah.
When Aaron was struggling again. Because I think it would have benefited Aaron, to the point Jamie made, of him getting more pitches to hit with the protection of Juan Soto. And we even saw it in the postseason that Soto was so locked in and Judge was struggling that they were pitching around Juan Soto to get to Aaron Judge.
Like, intentionally walking him, even with runners in scoring position.
We saw that.
You saw it happen. And so... But this is what I was getting at with Aaron Boone. He just kept it the same. He didn't try to help his star player. I know he's a star player, and I know he's supposed to figure it out. But sometimes you got to help your guy be great.
Mm.
That's what great coaches do. They help great players be great all the time.
Mike is calling from Rochester. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Evan and Tiki. Thank you for taking on my call.
What's up, man?
And Tiki, I love you, but I have to respectfully disagree about your opinion about the Yankees being a better team than the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think among the three teams that the Dodgers played last year in the playoffs, the Yankees were the weakest. To me,
no, they played the
real
weakest.
World Series, the Dodgers, what's that?
They played the weakest for sure.
Yes, I think, but I actually think they were the weakest. I think the strongest team the Dodgers played was the San Diego Padres. And if you ask the Dodger players, they'll tell you that the real World Series to them was playing the Padres in the division series in a best of five.
Well, you're right, only because the Padres ultimately put more fear of God into the Dodgers than any other team.
Well,
because they almost beat them.
And they're also familiar with them. So it's a little bit different. But my point is, the Dodgers had two bullpenning games against the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
The Yankees lost those games, right? So it's... They hit as many home runs as they actually hit more home runs than the Dodgers did in the World Series. They had, I think, just about the same amount of runs scored. They pitched the problem is they didn't pitch well, right? Luis Gil, who was Rookie of the Year and had his moment, he only started one game and he gave up, what, five runs in four innings or whatever heck it was. Clark Schmidt didn't pitch well. Carlos Rodon didn't pitch well. But... Juan Soto was fantastic. Aaron Judge should have been fantastic. Stanton was the ALCS MVP. Like, all of these things tell you that the Yankees should have performed better. They didn't.
They should have performed better. Ultimately, I think the Dodgers were the better team. Mm. And that's where I run into that wall with the Yankees, where every time they've been eliminated in the postseason, and in my opinion, they've been eliminated by a team that's better than them.
Look, you're probably, you're right, because obviously you got to give credit to the Dodgers, and I do. But I feel like the Yankees grossly underperformed.
They did. Oh, no, you're
grossly
right.
Grossly underperformed.
They underperformed with some of the defensive mistakes they made. And I'll simplify it to a level that I know is not fair, but I'll do it anyway because it helps prove my point. When the Yankees have had a home field advantage in the postseason, in the Aaron Boone era, they're undefeated. They have never lost a series in which they had home field advantage.
Right.
Not one time. When they have been the team without home field advantage, they've won a few of them, but they've lost. Those are the series that they've lost. Whether it's the World Series against the Dodgers, the Astros in 22, the Red Sox in 21, the Rays in 20, the Astros in 19, the Red Sox in 18. Every time they lost a postseason series. In the Aaron Boone era, it's been in a series in which they were the underdogs having to go and win on the road. When they've had home field advantage, they're undefeated. I brought this up late last year as to why I thought home field advantage mattered. That the Yankees have proven in the Boone era, if they have home field advantage, they're going to beat you.
Right.
They're undefeated in that situation. Sean's got a Cinco de 5-0, and then we've got a special guest. And that special guest, you may enjoy. You may find interesting, especially on a day like today, where a long-standing policy instituted by the great George Steinbrenner was instituted. What are you talking to me about? What's the matter?
Nothing. Let's just...
Okay.